This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Jonah Dillon is the Tigers football beat writer for the Commercial Appeal. He does it all for the CA. You can follow Jonah and his work on X at the Jonah Dillon. Read him at commercialappeal.com. We are less than 2 weeks from the Tigers season opener versus Chattanooga. He's got a story up right now over commercialappeal.com about the Tigers' new addition, or certainly they are hoping so, one that could be particularly impactful for the offense. First of all, Jonah, welcome. Appreciate you coming on. And then secondly, tell us how potentially impactful Cortez Bram, that's the pronunciation I'm going with. You can correct me if I'm wrong. How impactful could he be if he's out there for a whole season for Brendan Lewis in this Memphis offense?
Yeah, okay. So first of all, Braham. There we go. Hopefully, and if you're a Tiger fan, hopefully a name that you'll hear a lot this season. Looks like number four is going to be his number. So number four, Braham. You know, this is college sports nowadays, so getting to know names and numbers less than 2 weeks before the season opener, I guess, is how it is now, and obviously not a usual situation. I think the question with Cortez Braham is, you know, how long is it going to take him to kind of get up to speed? Because you can sit here and look at his production and say, like, this guy probably should be their number one receiver. Now, that probably says something about the rest of that receiving room. But at the same time, we don't know where he is in terms of, you know, what kind of shape he's in, how long it's going to take him to get into the playbook. Obviously, he has came from Nevada, so he has a relationship with Brendan Lewis, which is a huge part of it. But there are going to be a lot of questions, I think, until we see him on the field and see how quickly he's assimilated and things like that. But the potential there is for this guy to be the number one receiver. I think it's definitely there, and I think there's reason to believe that maybe in a couple weeks into the season, once he kind of gets his legs under him, this is a guy who's going to play a huge role for this team.
In terms of Brendan Lewis, Jonah, and like, what does success look like for him as a quarterback of this offense? Like, is it going to be just prolific, you know, running up numbers? Is it simply just like get in the line of scrimmage and using his experience to sort of read defenses and not make mistakes? Like, what's going to be asked of him in this offense this year?
Yeah, I think that's kind of one of the things that's going to define how we look back at this season. I think the first thing is, obviously, I mean, this is cliche with quarterbacks, but it's going to be wins. And this is somebody who's never won in his career, right? So this is like, that's going to be a big thing for this team. Obviously, they have high expectations in terms of where they should be in the conference. And he's somebody who's coming in and has not won, had a winning season anywhere that he's been so far. And this is his sixth season of college football. So that's a big part of it. I think in the offense, like, you're going to see a lot more quarterback run stuff. That's his skill set. It's obviously not something that you saw a ton of with Seth Hennigan. And so I think a lot of it is going to come down to kind of decision-making. How much are they going to give him at the line of scrimmage? I think that's a big question, because by the time Seth Hennigan was in his senior year last year, he was making legitimate checks at the line of scrimmage. They gave him a lot of responsibility. And now you've got Brendan Lewis coming in, who's, by the way, a year older than Seth Hennigan, but has not been in the system, obviously. And so how much they trust him at the line of scrimmage, I think, is something to watch in the first couple games. And then how much he can kind of do things that are different and give Memphis a different dynamic than they've had the past couple of years, that's going to be the question throughout the rest of the season.
It feels like, Jonah, and I want to know what you think, that there's an opportunity to get maybe potentially really creative Tim Kramsey in terms of this run game, right, with Greg and with Sutton Smith behind Lewis in this case. And then, as you've mentioned, Lewis's ability to run, I know a lot of folks are looking at RPO stuff, but Ryan too is a former run game coordinator. Brad and I were trying to talk this through last week after Lewis was named the starter, and it just feels like there's an opportunity. Maybe you're not as explosive in terms of your passing game the way you've been in years prior, but with this run game, maybe it leads just because it looks like you'll have a bunch of options to go to back there.
Yeah, I mean, to me, that's going to be the offense this year. I think it's all about those two running backs.
Yes.
And then obviously the way that Brandon Lewis complements them. If this team can't run the ball, I think that's it. I think that this is going to be, like, in the past couple of years, it's kind of the opposite last year. Where, like, they didn't run the ball because the defense was basically begging them to, saying, you know, we're just going to sit back, so do whatever you want. I think with this team, it's going to be the opposite. I think they're going to dare teams to try to throw the ball down the field. But if they cannot, if they can't establish the run early in all these games because of the talent that those two guys have, I think they're going to struggle a lot, because then you're going to see different types of defenses, obviously. But and that's the strength of this offense. Those two guys, Greg Dwizzy and Sutton Smith, I mean, those are both home run hitter type running backs. We've seen what they can both do in pretty limited action the past couple of years. And so health is going to be a question for both of them. But if they're both healthy, like, that's going to be the engine of this team, I think, is them kind of tag teaming it back and forth throughout drives and playing together, lining up in the slot, things like that. And if those two guys aren't healthy, or if things aren't working out in the run game, I think that there's a lot of reasons to be concerned about this thing.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, man, if you can have Cortez out there for a full year, and I know that what is the, I guess, because you spent a great deal of time on it, the idea that he'll be ready for the opener, but what's the optimism level that you'll have him for the whole season with the some of the NCAA stuff still pending? Clear that up for me, Jonah.
Yeah, so he should be, as of now, eligible to play, right? So there's this legal case that's ongoing, and as we all know, these things are extremely complicated. I would say it's obviously not the same, but it's similar to the Diego Pavia case in the sense that the Diego Pavia case is still ongoing. Like, they're still litigating that, but he's obviously eligible to play right now. So I think it would be pretty surprising if Cortez Braham was, at some point in the season, they said, hey, you're not eligible anymore. They're going to continue with these things. Now, obviously, a lot of these cases, it's kind of like, what's the point of continuing to litigate them if the guy's already going to play the whole season? And there is, some people would say, because of the precedent and all these cases. But right now they're operating like this guy's going to be able to play, and he's going to play. And I would expect that, obviously, we'll continue to follow it, and I'll continue to read through all these super fun legal documents. But yeah, for now, I think that's where we are.
When you sort of look at the landscape around the league, Jonah, we talk about it all the time. I mean, Memphis is the most well-funded program in the group of however many conferences it is now. And yet, you know, look, I understand that they are replacing quite a bit, but that's the world that we live in now. You're going to be replacing people all the time, whether you're Memphis or Tulane or Boise State or whatever the case may be. So when you sort of look around and you see the schedule that Memphis has with most of these swing games at home, should it not be, you know, very reasonable for Memphis to make an appearance in the conference championship game? Like, I feel like it's almost sacrilege for me to say that Memphis should be in the conference championship game, but, like, should it be based on their funding and the games that they have and where they're being played this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a fair expectation. I think really, like you said, with this conference, what it is now and the resources that Memphis has, like, that should be the expectation every year. And I know, obviously, that this has been unique this offseason in terms of the amount of guys they've lost. But look, last year, that was the expectation, and they didn't make it there, obviously, and they brought everybody back. And then you look at the guys they brought in, yes, they're all new faces, but in terms of talent, in terms of money, like, this is a more talented team than you're going to see in the rest of the conference, right? I mean, Tulane's bringing a lot of guys back, and I think it's fair to pick them to be the number one team right now in the conference. But Memphis, in terms of talent, is right up there, and the expectation should be there, especially, like you said, with getting a lot of those games at home, is you should be able to be in that position to go to the conference championship game. And I think, honestly, like, we're going to go into most seasons, assuming Memphis is still in this conference, saying that. Like, this, it's hard for me to imagine a situation where we go into a season for football in this conference and we say, like, oh, Memphis shouldn't be in that conversation, unless there's some crazy amount of investment with other teams. I think they should be there every year.
Well, so I'm going to ask you to sort of speculate a little bit, but do you think behind the scenes, like, away from microphones and away from cameras, that Memphis football believes it's fair to expect them to make the conference championship game this season? Do you think they believe that that's a fair baseline? Because I think they do not believe that behind closed doors, but I could be wrong.
Well, I think they believe they can get there. I don't know, obviously, in terms of the perception. I think, look, if you can easily see, right, if this season, let's say they lose a couple games early, obviously the conversation is going to be, well, this was a transitional year, right? And like, in retrospect, maybe it is. That's the thing. You look back on these things, and maybe if they, you know, in 3 years, they made the conference championship game the last 2 years, you say, well, it was a transitional year, but it benefited them a lot. So I think that maybe there's some people who would believe that and say, like, look, it's a transitional year. But again, you're starting a sixth-year quarterback was 1 year of eligibility, right? And so that tells me that, look, we believe that this team is good enough to compete at that level, and that's why we're kind of going in with this guy, and we're not going to go with a developmental player, which obviously the two other quarterbacks are options. And it makes sense. Again, the experience you've heard of with Brendan Lewis compared to the other guys. But that decision, I think, signals, and it's been clear that it's been trending that way for a long time, that decision, I think, signals they believe they can get there this year.
I'm so glad you went to the two and the three, or potentially the two and the three, Arrington Maiden and A.J. Hill, because I've wondered, Jonah, I'm looking at this as a potential subplot here, because we've talked about the investment you've put into getting the four-star that is A.J. Hill, and we've talked about how good Arrington Maiden's looked just about every opportunity, and I wondered when I read you this, and saw from Silverfield that no, after even the Lewis news, not going to name a two or three, if this was a first step perhaps in trying to retain the both of them. I've kind of framed it as, I don't know if you can keep a Arrington Maiden if you're going to have A.J. Hill and want to incorporate him in some stuff. I just wondered, do you think at some point we get to a 1-2-3, or is this sort of saying to both of them, you've both been great and we could see a future for both of you here, and trying to keep both?
Yeah, I mean, I think to the second part, I think that definitely if you said right now what's the ideal situation like going into next season, it would be that both of those guys are still here and are both competing for that spot and are legitimately the two guys competing for that spot. Like, I think, you can never tell what's going to happen. But if everything goes well this season, obviously Brendan Lewis out of eligibility, maybe they would bring in somebody who had some experience but not somebody who they think is going to compete with those two guys. Let them compete, and then that's your quarterback for the next year. Now, is that going to happen? Are you going to be able to retain both those guys? It's tough to say, but that is a balancing act that they've got to think about throughout this season. I think the thing I would think about in terms of who's a backup, Arrington Maiden is much closer in terms of his play style to Brendan Lewis,
okay. And
A.J. Hill really is not. He's different. So, look, maybe they'll name him the backup or whatever it is, but if you're talking about in-game, some sort of adjustment, like let's say Brendan Lewis gets hurt and they have to bring somebody in, it would be a lot less jarring in terms of offensive style to go to Arrington Maiden than it would to go to A.J. Hill. Now, if you had a whole week to prepare knowing someone was out, maybe it'd be a different story. And maybe that's the conversation that they've had internally of like, hey, this is the guy we'd put in right here. But maybe if we had to pivot for the rest of the season, it would be a different conversation. And so I think that's probably part of it, too.
Yeah, like I'm so fascinated by this because I think it's one of those things where, if you play the year out and A.J. Hill is whatever he is, whether he's the two or the three, I don't know how much it's ultimately mattering. But if it goes the way it goes, and Brendan Lewis plays the entire year and A.J. Hill, doesn't really see a lot of reps, and he transfers and he goes somewhere else, like, would you ever do that again? Like, would you? I mean, it's almost like you can't. I mean, how can I recruit a four-star freshman, him sit on my bench, and then I just lose him in a year because he's disgruntled that he didn't play? Like, it's really a tough situation for any staff to try to navigate.
Yeah, and then it's like, I would be interested, like, let's say he did that. Like, what would his market be like? Because we know his market was, legit Power 4, Florida, all those types of schools were after him.
Yep.
But some of these guys, you see them go to a place and, look at Malachi Nelson. He was the number one recruit in the country a couple years ago at USC. And now he's battling, he hasn't played anywhere, and now he's battling for a starting job at UTEP. So it's like, what are the options that are out there for you, even if you do that, once you decide, here's where I'm going to go? It's one thing to go to Memphis and be a starter, but then who knows what happens next? And so I think that's part of it as we kind of get toward the end of the season as well.
I actually think that's like a really interesting thing to explore because, his market can't be that great because I think if I was a Power 4 staff, and I would say, you couldn't even beat out Brendan Lewis. You couldn't even beat out a guy that has played 6 years and won four games. I know you're a freshman, but if you were really that guy to where, I'm supposed to be expected to fork over seven figures for your NIL or whatever the case may be, and you couldn't beat out Brendan Lewis at Memphis, you probably are not that guy.
Yeah, that's why it's so hard is like if he was going to go to the other school that was his finalist was Florida, right? And so if he went to Florida, obviously he's not playing this year.
Right.
And
that's
really
right.
Like when is he going to play? So on one hand, you're developing in that system and they'll say, hey, look, when Lagway leaves, like you're the guy, whatever that is. But it might be the same situation. You might turn around a couple of years and say, like, I don't see a pathway here, or they recruit over you, and then you're in the same problem. And so that's why I think it's hard to know. We look at the end of the season, is he going to go in the portal? How is he going to feel? Like, it's really about what's out there, what his market is.
I think, in a way, I hate to say it like this, but, like, I think for the longevity of his career, and I hate to say it, we might look back and say that it was a mistake for him to come here, because if he doesn't hack it here and then he has to hit the open market, like, you could have sold a program on sitting behind DJ Lagway and said, I couldn't get past DJ Lagway on the depth chart. You know, you're not going to be able to sell a staff on, I couldn't get past Brendan Lewis. You know what I'm saying? So I feel like, you know, it ultimately maybe the short term was good for him, but I don't know. The long term, I think, is very much questionable if he can't show, you know, anything here.
Jonah, are you expecting 3-0 start going into Arkansas, and how much of a chance? You know, I realize it's early, and Arkansas has got its, you know, everything it's got to worry about with the SEC, but how much of a chance would you give a 3-0 Memphis team at that point? Let's just say that, you know, what you've done in the run game looks pretty good. Cortez is out there. He's helping keep defenses honest, at least with a decent enough passing game, because how familiar he is with Brendan Lewis. If they go 3-0, how much of a chance you giving them against Arkansas?
Yeah, I think I give them a good chance. I mean, look, they should go 3-0. You're talking about Georgia State and Troy. Obviously, you go on the road, weird stuff happens, and certainly Memphis has played a lot of close games against teams that it should not be playing close games against in the past couple of years. And so, you know, like, yes, trap game, whatever, but they should beat those teams. Arkansas, like, I don't really believe in that team and in the SEC. Now, obviously, they could be bad in the SEC and still be good enough to win non-conference games. I don't see that team being some, you know, they come into Memphis and just dominate. Like, I think that really Memphis has every opportunity to win that game. And especially if you are 3-0, then you're in a situation where, like, you've got some momentum behind you. And I think that game is going to be competitive. I think Memphis could definitely win it. And then from there, it'd be really interesting to see how they, you know, you got a week turnaround and suddenly it's conference play. I think there could be a lot of momentum behind this thing as they get to that point.
Jonah, great
it's
stuff
really
as always.
Thank you, brother. Great stuff.
Yeah, thanks.
Appreciate you.
Yes, Jonah Dillon covers Memphis football for the Commercial Appeal. Yeah, that A.J. Hill one is going to be interesting. Because when you don't play a Florida, I can chalk that up. You didn't play a Florida in front of DJ Lagway. But when you don't play a Memphis, it's going to kill your market.
I mean, there are just so few freshmen starting under center to start. And even in this, we talked about with Seth. I mean, mm-hmm. Seth was, like we said, might be the last of Mohicans, mm-hmm. guys that come and get that chance. And mm-hmm. I'll just say, with Brendan having 35, 36, whatever it is, starts, literally Arrington and AJ haven't thrown a pass.
No, that's true.
And you're in at a program that has to win to the level of a Boise State or a Tulane in terms of the expectations. You got John Martin on the radio saying, hey, we got to make a conference title game in what, you know, some coaches would call a reset year.
Right.
I just think folks understand, even as talented as he is, mm-hmm. you know, you probably got to work men. I don't know. I think keeping him, retaining him, one of the biggest subplots to see. You have more invested in him than you do in Arrington Maiden. Maybe that's a way to keep both.
Yeah.
Maybe there's not. I hear what you're saying, though, in terms of market. Oh, that's not that impressive. But most folks understand you're starting the transfer, you know, you're starting that last year guy usually if your other two options are guys that haven't thrown a pass.
Yep.
In college football.
Yeah, and let's see how the year plays out, right? I mean, there could be a scenario where he does start. I mean, you know, you never know. You never know. Brendan Lewis may come in and not be that good.
Seems to me if they're going to go to a more pass-first offense, that's AJ. So if they decide at some point, because like he said, Maine's more like Brendan Lewis.
Yep.
If they decide at some point they have to scrap that type of offense, that's when AJ comes in. He's the get the ball down the field guy. Mm. It's completely different. And so you've at that point maybe you've changed gears. Like I talked about with Brad, if this season's going off the rails, you've lost one of those first three. You're losing to Arkansas. There's probably not a chance you're going to win the conference.
Yep,
bro. I'm switching it over to Hill at that point and saying, bro, you're my quarterback.
That's right.
You know, and again, how his family feels, how much left is going to play into. But I would at that point I'm investing in him for next year already.
Well, and look, there's a lot of recent history in this program with starting freshman quarterbacks. Three of the last four did it. Fuente did it. Porter did it with Ryan Williams. Remember him? And obviously Ryan Silverfield has done it. Norvell's had inherited – well, he didn't inherit, but he went out and got Riley Ferguson, and then he brought in Brady White. But Silverfield's already started a freshman. Fuente started Paxton Lynch. Larry Porter started running. So there is a history of that happening here. I think they will definitely give Brandon Lewis the first shake, see how well he plays.
Fuente is a different time with lower expectations.
There's
so
no
you,
doubt.
Could get away
no
with,
doubt.
You could get away with that. This is a four-star now. That's why I go back to where you could here
right.
because of what's
invested.
If
he comes
you're
out the gate
and seven
struggles.
Figures.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know. There's a lot more, but it was different time for Fuente back then in terms of the expectation level we have on Memphis.
And,
you
and by the way, he's,
you be 3-0.
Still
you got 4-0.
Hammered, even with the expectations.
Yeah, plenty of folks saying he shouldn't be playing.
You know, so it's not like, but I don't think there would be that groundswell of support for Brandon Lewis because he's never had success anywhere. You know, so I think if there's a scenario here where in the first 4 weeks he comes in and he doesn't light the world on fire and Memphis offense kind of stalls out, you know, I think they could look into it. I think they could entertain it.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.